It is Friday, August 19th, 2005, 10:06 a.m. on the Central Coast of California. Today we're talking with talk show host David Lawrence. And of course, it's time now for Geek Speak. Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. My name is Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP or KDBH. Today on Geek Speak, after a spot of geek news, we're speaking with David Lawrence, a well-known talk show host who covers pop culture, tech, movies, music, TV, humor, morals, ethics, and politics 6 days a week on satellite radio stations. David has the term Geek Speak trademarked, and a while ago he contacted us, and today we're going to find out all about what we do with our name, Geek Speak, and with his ownership of that name. That's David Lawrence and a little bit after Geek News. During the second half of the show, I welcome you to join our conversation. The phone numbers are 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877, or you can go to geekspeak.org and click on Contact Us. I'll give out that contact information again when I invite your participation in about a half an hour. This is Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. In the air with me is Geek Miles Elam. Miles, you're the technical trainer for Surf Control. And we have Dee Dee.
Or one of, yeah.
Yeah, and one of. And from New York, Dee Dee Hubbard. Dee Dee, is, welcome to Geek Speak. And maybe we don't have Dee Dee. Dee Dee can't hear us. Hey, Dee Dee, how's it going?
Hey.
Thanks for joining us on such short notice, Dee Dee. All right, we're going to do some geek news before we get into a discussion with David Lawrence. And Dee Dee, I'd like to start with you, because I know you're kind of prepared and sitting at a desk and ready, and Miles is having network trouble. So, Dee Dee, what you got for us today?
Well, I got some gaming news for the gamers out there. Game Boy Micro is, they sort of set the price that they want to launch it with, and the date. So everyone can pick up the newest Game Boy September 19th in the U.S. and in Canada, and November 4th in Europe. So that would... And they set the price a little bit higher than you can get the Game Boy SP at $99 or 99 euros if you're in Europe.
And for all of us non-portable, handheld, you know, gaming people and such, what are these things?
Well, you might have seen people walking around with the Game Boy SP, which kind of like folds down into a little square and it's really portable. Well, this one's even smaller. Game Boy Micro is, it fits in one, in the palm of your hand, and has a really tiny but really bright screen. And they're sort of aiming towards people who want a more stylish gaming experience. You can change the look of your Game Boy Micro by adding faceplates. And it looks like they're going to be launching with Camouflage, Flame, and Ladybug.
Okay. Which one are you going to get?
I don't know. I've kind of been staying out of the handheld thing lately. But Microsoft both had a big announcement about their upcoming game console, Xbox 360. Mm-hmm. They announced what the pricing that they, or maybe it leaked out, but the pricing for the Xbox is going to come out around Christmas time.
Mm-hmm.
$300.
That's pretty good. I mean, that's a full gaming computer, and it can also do other things like surf the web and be a media center for your home. That's a pretty good price.
Yeah, it's a mini computer. It seems like Microsoft might be selling these at a loss again.
Uh-huh. Well, they're trying to get in that game market. It's supposedly pretty profitable. All right, thank you, Dee Dee. Miles, I'm going to go to you now, sir.
Yes, I got some information on the Milky Way. Everyone thinks, okay, we already know about the Milky Way. Well, as it turns out, there has been some evidence from the Spitzer Space Telescope that backup...
Say that again. Spitzer Space Telescope.
Like yes. That backs up previously collected information or evidence that the Milky Way is not a normal spiral galaxy, but rather a barred spiral galaxy.
Is that good or bad for us? No, what does that mean?
And in other words, instead of having a bunch of spokes that all come out from the center,
mm-hmm.
it's like a long bar that will rotate, and everything kind of trails off of that bar.
Okay. Like a forward wake or something. So is that uncommon for galaxies?
No, actually, barred spiral galaxies are by no means rare. It's simply that we had always assumed that the Milky Way was a normal spiral galaxy, but in fact it is a barred spiral galaxy.
Thank you, Miles. I feel like I can go to sleep easy tonight. We'll go back to you, Dee Dee in New York. What's up?
RSS is failing to gain audience mindshare. We've actually talked about RSS on the show.
And you have a wonderful article about what RSS is on geekspeak.org.
But it seems that it just hasn't really caught on. Nielsen polled about 1,000 members of its research panel mm-hmm. who read blogs, and they found that nearly two-thirds of the respondents either never heard of RSS or did not know what the technology was used for. And they found that only 11% of web blog readers use RSS to monitor blogs.
Huh. Then again, how many people have polled would say, yes, do you use the HTTP protocol?
Right, they might be using it, just not know.
Right. So a lot of times, like for example, the trackback interface, mm. which is common on many blogs to be able to connect different blogs together for related information, a lot of those have an interface that is not technical, and you don't know that RSS is involved. All you know is that you have a blogger account.
But I think Dee Dee's talking about like a RSS aggregating client-side application that you run and find RSS feeds.
Which is only one application of RSS,
That's
though.
True. That's true. But it's relatively popular, and it's one of the reasons why on most sites you see RSS feeds now or as a logo and an icon.
Well, see, I think of, for example, Mozilla Firefox, where you can actually whenever a site has an RSS feed, it's a little icon on the bottom right-hand corner. You click on that, and the RSS feed becomes part of your bookmarks.
Right. But that's not... I'm assuming that you'd have to know what RSS is to even click on that button.
Not necessarily.
But it's interesting.
Buttons, everyone wants to click on the orange button.
So let's clarify for, everyone in California at least. RSS is real simple syndication. These are the names for it. But it's basically a way of formatting content online where other people can use that content without going through your normal web interface. So one of the applications that Dee Dee's kind of inferring that's not being used is an RSS client readers, which are basically these applications you run on your computer. Sometimes they're built into your browser, like Firefox has one built in, and Safari has one built in on the Mac, where when you do find a URL that is an RSS feed, a special formatted content, if you will, if you click on that, it will add it to your list of RSS feeds. And then what happens is, without visiting each one of those websites, your personal computer will have the information about those websites on it, the most up-to-date information, if you will. We have an RSS feed on GeekSpeak, for example, to actually do podcasting. That's one of the way the podcasting works, actually, is a modified RSS feed. We don't advertise it very well. You can't find it very well. You've got to go to the RSS article that Dee Dee wrote to find it. But this allows you to participate in our content without having to visit our site every time you want to do that. And all the big boys do it, which is really kind of nice for news reading, if you want to get multiple news sources all in one place.
Well, in a nutshell, your computer tells you when the websites that you like have new stuff for you to read.
That's the great thing about it, is you don't have to go and look at every site and see that, oh, it hasn't changed. So if you're interested in RSS, go ahead and go to geekspeak.org and click on the right-hand side, there's a big orange button that says Quick RSS, and it's an article by Dee Dee. Okay. Miles, I'm going to go to you for the last news story of the day, and then I want to get to David, who's
Except
on the phone.
I have none because I have no network connectivity. Yes, I have an IP address, I have the default gateway, I can ping the default gateway, but I cannot ping the DNS server.
It's such a shame when technology inhibits creativity.
Yeah, especially when you're on the air being listened by listened to by thousands.
Well, I mean, it's because you're using a Windows machine. Okay, Dee Dee, you got another news story for us? Should we go to David?
San Francisco Mayor Newsom, he wants to start a free wireless initiative in San Francisco. But he doesn't have the money.
Well, I want to buy a, but I don't have the money.
You want to buy a bridge in Brooklyn?
Exactly.
Oh, I'm sorry, that actually reminds me. This is a kind of related for the news story, is that there's some rumors that Google has been seeding money to municipalities around the country for free Wi-Fi access. And I'm wondering if some of this has to do with some of the initiatives in San Francisco and the Bay Area for setting
possibly
up municipal Wi-Fi access.
All right. I think we've burned through the news quite effectively now. And maybe, Miles, if you get some network access, you can join more information.
I'm too wicked.
You're listening to Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. The Geeks this morning, Dee Dee Hubbard from New York and Miles Elam here in Santa Cruz with me. We are now going to talk with David Lawrence, who is in Los Angeles. David owns the trademark to the name Geek Speak, which we use, and the trademark is used for the same purpose that we use it for, which is radio broadcasting and iPod casting, if you will. And David Lawrence is a talk show host for years now, and is on both satellite networks, and I think broadcasts 6 days a week. Is that right, David?
Yeah, we're on both XM and Sirius, and on about 125 terrestrial radio stations, AM and FM stations across the country. Commercial, not public radio like you're on.
Right. So you kind of know about this radio business.
A little bit. This is my 33rd year.
33rd year, so you've been doing it longer than I've been alive.
And it's interesting listening to you talk about the Nielsen net ratings story.
Yeah.
It is so indicative of the kind of news that isn't really news. If you go to NielsenNetRatings.com and read the actual choices of answers,
right? What were they?
They don't say newsreader. They don't say, you know, have you used any of the following applications, which would be familiar to people if they have a Mac newsreader or a PC newsreader. Here are your choices. I use a feed aggregating website to monitor RSS feeds for blogs. The respondents there, 6.4%.
Surprise, surprise.
Yeah. Second response, I've heard of RSS and know what it does, but don't use RSS feeds. Now get this, that's 23%.
Okay, so people know what it is.
Well, there's two more responses. Huh? I've heard of RSS, but don't know what it does. 15.7%. Dave Weiner is a doofus. 50%. No, I've never heard of RSS before today. 50%. So really, this business of 11%. How did they arrive at that number?
Yeah, but what if the question had been, "Have you heard of podcasting?"
Sure, and that
do you do podcasting?
That's been asked several times, and you know, the Pew Internet Life Study did a series of things. Again, their questions were odd as well. They didn't say, do you listen to podcasts? They said, have you at any point in time ever heard online audio? And they somehow extrapolated that into have you ever heard a podcast? You know, it just is really, and that to me is sort of the crux of what you do, what I do. The nomenclature that's used in technology is generated by engineers, massaged by marketers, and then is highly suspect to the audience, the public, the people that, you know, are going to buy whatever they want to buy, and then either shove them into a drawer and never use them, sit on their desk and use 1/1000th of their power.
Right.
You know, the nomenclature confuses people all the time.
We're asking a random person out there on the road, does your car have a dual cam dual stroke over cam?
I put gas in it, it goes.
more than this.
Yeah, what brand or what type of spark plug do you have? What size? Yeah.
Or here's another one. Ask them two sets of questions. Do you have OnStar?
Right.
Or do you have a GPS-based monitoring system for use during emergencies? You know? So,
you'd get a different answer, that's for sure.
I'm not so sure that 11% is although it could be. You never know. I mean,
you can say pretty effectively that at least 50% of the population knows what RSS is, or at least the online population, which makes sense. All right. So, gosh, I guess it's been months now. You contacted KOSP and said, you know, GeekSpeak's, I own that trademark.
Actually, I never said that to the young lady that answered. I said, can you tell me who the producer is for GeekSpeak? And it was twofold. Number one, I really liked the show, and number two,
that's useful for us
very much.
Yeah, and I started listening to it on the podcast first because I'm down in Los Angeles and I can't pick up the signal of KUSP, which I think is really brilliant that you have a public radio station with the last three letters meaning unique selling proposition. But then, what am I? Anyway, I called and she said, this doesn't sound good. And I said, no, it's fine. I just want to know who produces it. And then the general manager put me in touch with you. And I think we had a fairly pleasant conversation.
We did. And, you know, the gist of it, the thing about it that happened to me first in my feelings when talking with you was you were like, basically start, you know, you can keep using it. Just give me a credit so that I don't lose the trademark. And that's basically one of the major things about trademark. You've got to enforce it or you lose it. So regular listeners of KSP have been hearing for months now me say, GeekSpeak is a registered service mark of Online Tonight with David Lawrence. Well, this is David Lawrence, by the way. And it kind of stressed me out because the idea of someone else owning the name, that theoretically things could change in the future and maybe you wouldn't own it, maybe some corporation would own it.
Right.
And somebody would start being less sane than you are being and less giving than you are being and say, stop using it completely. So one of the thought process was, if we don't control it, if we don't own it, keeping using it and keep on and still producing the brand of it is kind of a dangerous thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
Because at some point we lose it. So we might as well start building a new brand right away. And this led us, that logic train, even though I'd spoken with you and you were like, it's pretty simple, keep using it. We went off on this tangent, the geeks went on this tangent for quite a while, of going, what do we name the show? How do we rename the show and then trademark it and make sure it's ours? And
right, how far do we want to take GeekSpeak in and of itself?
That's that right. And that's the other big question
too,
is right
is
now.
Is it even worth it?
Right, because we're on. I mean, we give away this content. This is, you know, volunteer. We give away. It's nothing like we don't make a living like David does. So we were, of course, pretty concerned about those issues. And we talked about it for a long time, trying to find a name. We couldn't get a name, and that's a major reason why we were like, is this really make any sense? It's a great name, and we can use it, and we don't have to spend the legal muscle to defend it because you're defending it.
Right. Here's the situation. GeekSpeak, pretty, you know, great minds think alike. A lot of people have ended up when presented with, we're doing this radio show about technology, or, hey, I'm going to put up a directory of all these goofy abbreviations and acronyms in technology. What should we call it? Well, let's rhyme it. Let's call it GeekSpeak. Yeah, high five. So we came to that conclusion way back in 1991.
Yeah, and we're not the only two radio stations or radio programs.
Right. There's a ton of websites out there. There's a ton of sites that don't call themselves GeekSpeak but have sort of subsets of things called GeekSpeak.
Right.
And, you know, to me, this isn't about... if the government didn't require that, you know, I be able to prove at some point in time in the courts that I made an attempt to let people who were infringing on a service mark, and you know, this is not to cast aspersions, people don't know these things. And usually the knee-jerk reaction of an organization is, I own that, stop using it, or pay me a lot of money.
Right. Now, which is what I feared when I heard that somebody owned the name and was coming to talk to me.
Right, and most people do.
Yeah.
And so, you know, to me, it's cool that people do this, and for the most part, unless they're using it to redirect people to a porn site, that's my reaction. Is, you know, look, this is mine. I love that you're using it. I think it's brilliant. I like what you're doing. You know, if I actually...
Yeah, that and we're not a direct competitor. In fact, we're growing the market.
You know, there's every opportunity for others to say, well, now, look, in the Santa Cruz area, XM and Sirius come in quite nicely. Thank
right.
you very much.
Of course.
And the fact of the matter is that, you know, you could be causing confusion in the marketplace because on Saturday night, when people hear what I say, and in fact, KNEW might even feed down from San Francisco and be able to be picked up at that time of night. So there is that possibility. But I think that's fairly short-sighted in what we do, you and I and others in this space do. I can make plenty of money off my advertising. Your station, hopefully, can make plenty of money off listener donations and pledge drives and whatnot, and support from other areas. I don't believe it has to be an adversarial situation. And many, many times, people have responded with, what? You know, they expect this aggressive...
Yeah, no, I did. I was surprised that you're... Go ahead and use it.
Yeah, no. Good. All I want to make sure we have is some sort of reference to this,
mm-hmm.
you know, and then we're done. I applaud what you do. I'm thrilled. And hey, let's have you on my show. Let's talk about your show.
And that was fun.
Yeah. So I think that's one way. Now, not everybody's going to think that.
Right.
I think if you started calling your show the Coca-Cola Hour, you know,
not so much.
You might have an issue, but... I think that in this case, you know, to me, it's great. It's a great joy to go and sort of tell people, hey, let's be part of the system. Let's keep it safe all around. Let's make sure that nobody misuses it. You know, if somebody is redirecting to a porn site, then, you know, there's an immediate letter not from me but from my attorney.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think it's, And I appreciate the fact that you were actually open to listening to it. I sent an email out to a large corporation that I think does customer service management software. They had an area on their website. Because listeners call, the listeners send me email. Hey, did you know that this is going on with GeekSpeak, you know? And so I sent a nice letter to them, and I said, you know, I appreciate that. I understand that you're using it. Let me just point out, here's... And you actually went to the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office and looked it up to see if I was full of it or not, right?
Right, of course.
Yeah. So did they. Uh-huh. And they immediately sent me a letter back going, we're changing the name of the area on the site.
That's not what you're asking for.
Yeah, I said, I'm not asking you to do that. But okay, if that's what you want. It's certainly your one of your options.
One of your prerogatives, sure.
And they never heard back from them again. And the next day, every vestige of GeekSpeak was gone from the site.
Amazing the effect law has, isn't it?
Well, I just sent a real...
But it's also the corporate culture.
The paranoia, yeah.
Exactly.
Right.
I think that some corporations... I'm an objectivist. I'm an unabashed capitalist pig, so... I'm not ready to cast aspersions blanketly on corporations as being in this particular mindset. But in this case, this company, I'm not even going to mess with it. We don't need it. We don't care. Right. I don't want to get involved. I got too many other things to do. Boom, it's gone.
Right. All right, David. Let's talk a little bit about your show. You've been doing radio for 33 years, but
yep.
Your current show, you've got Monday through Friday on. That's on XM or is that on Sirius?
It's on both. Our shows are the only shows that are on both satellite systems.
Oh, so both your shows are on both satellite systems.
Yes, and in fact, my third show is on one of them, and may end up being on the other one. Here are the shows that I do. I do the David Lawrence Show, which is pop culture and technology in that order. So every night. You know, we may end up talking about everything from, the new virus that hit last week, that Microsoft had patched, to why it hit ABC, CNN, the media outlets,
mm-hmm.
to what's going on with that woman in Texas who's wanting to have a little chat with the president again. So we talk pop culture and technology. On the weekend, on Saturday night, it's called Online Tonight, and there it's pure technology, competes with other shows in the same sort of genre. Very similar to what you do in the second half hour of your show, taking call after call after call from people who usually either A, want to get rid of pop-up ads, or B, want to stop spam.
Amazing. Called it.
Yeah, that, what?
You called our show. It's amazing.
Well, it is. It has taken over the zeitgeist of the tech-using population.
Yeah.
And they are befuddled. And... we have been very patient and very kind and very generous to people who are hurting us. Spammers and pop-up ad purveyors, it's just, if you were presented with someone like that at a party and you'd had a drink or so...
you'd throw it in their face.
You just might do that. And so, you know, that's not the kind of life I want to live, but my audience is being hurt by that. My third show is called the Net Music Countdown, and it competes with shows like... Weekly Top 40 and Rick D's and countdown shows. We count down the top songs on the internet.
And when do you do that show?
That's weekly. It depends on when the station carries the show.
Mm-hmm.
It goes out to them on CD and via an RSS feed, actually.
Imagine that.
Yeah.
Okay, so
no one knows what that is.
I have a question for you, though. And I mean no offense by this, but do you have a personal life?
on top of all that, I'm a working actor here in L.A., I have a couple of websites that I at least administer if I don't do building on FantasyMusicLeague.com, which is basically fantasy sports for music lovers. Instead of a team, a football team, baseball team, you put together a record label.
Nice.
And how their game is the charts, how they appear each week on the charts. And then another site that I developed specifically because I didn't have the kind of time that you have to answer questions. We have these goofy commercials that interrupt me at every turn, thankfully, because that's how I make my living. But
between commercial radio and community radio.
Yeah, if I wanted to, answer a longer question, like, can you explain to me how to convert LPs, albums, vinyl, into CDs and MP3s?
Right.
Well, I love that question. I love that answer. It's one of my joys, my passions is audio. But I can't answer it in 90 seconds. So I started writing a series of books called 10 Quick Steps, 10 Quick Steps,
mm-hmm.
to converting LPs to CDs or backing up your computer or
getting rid of pop-ups.
Getting rid of pop-up ads, right. Because it's a long answer.
Right.
And I started selling them on the web, and it's grown to the point where we have 33 titles with both tech and lifestyle projects and solutions, and we've started to take on general books as well. Will Wheaton, who everybody knows in the blogosphere, he's one of the most read bloggers and formerly, lieutenant on Star Trek.
Or Ensign Wesley Crusher on Star Trek.
Ensign and lieutenant.
I'm sorry. You are the
alpha. All right. We'll go on with this topic in just a minute. This program is supported by a grant from Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer and electronic parts, as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Selkell Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com.
You were absolutely right. He was
ensign. He came here from Germany after the war, and Americans decided, with no evidence at all, that it was Hitler's yacht. Kids tried to set it on fire. Neo-Nazi groups offered $500,000 for it. Concentration camp survivor said that when he stood by the boat, he could hear the voice of his dead, beloved wife. You could get a tour. You could buy a piece of the deck. Hitler's Yacht in America, this week on This American Life.
Catch This American Life Sunday at 10 a.m. on Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP.
You're listening to Geek Speak. The guest today is David Lawrence, talk show host. And Geek obviously just out-trumped Miles with talking about Wesley Crusher.
Right, I have a whole bunch of friends who are now going to like meet me out in the back and beat me with baseball bats.
Sure, I'm clear on this.
Yeah.
He was ensign and lieutenant. He got a promotion during the course of the series. So you were absolutely right, Miles.
Good.
Phew. Will. Will tends to point that out. I did end up as a lieutenant. So
you are listening to Geek Speak. If you have questions or comments to join the Geeks, the phone numbers are 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Of course, you can go to geekspeak.org and click on Contact Us. Again, the phone numbers, please call in with any questions or comments. I'm sure that Miles, myself, and David can answer anything you have to throw at us. Phone number is 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. This program is supported by a grant from Cruise.io, providing local and nationwide internet services, including DSL 6.0, spam filters, and virus protection. Information about Cruise.io membership is available online at cruise.io.com or by calling 459-6301. Let's see, the board of directors of KUSP and the Pataphysical Broadcasting Foundation meets monthly, and the public is invited. This month, the meeting is on Monday evening, August 22nd, beginning at 6 p.m. at the KUSP studios, 203 8th Avenue in Santa Cruz. Call the station during business hours for more information, like right now if you'd like. Phone numbers are just like what you'd want to call if you wanted to call into GeekSpeak right now, 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877.
The Santa Cruz branch of the NAACP holds their 2005 annual Labor Day picnic with live music, games, and home-cooked barbecue from 12 noon to 5 p.m. on Sunday, September 4th at De La Viega Park. Information is available at 429-2266.
You're listening to Geek Speak. The phone numbers are open. The phone lines are open to ask us questions and comments about technology. 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. David, you were saying, David Lawrence is online with us. David Lawrence is a talk show host on satellite and, well, on multiple stations, and he covers pop culture, music, technology, and more. But, David, you were talking about blogging like Wesley Crusher, or actually Will.
Yeah, let me just finish that.
Please do finish that.
The reason I mentioned Will Wheaton is that on 10quicksteps.com, we actually have the audio version of his book, Just a Geek, which sort of is the first half of his life, standing, you know, deciding to quit Star Trek and how that changed his life from being a well-known working actor to someone who wonders why he is no longer a well-known working actor and became a geek. Mm-hmm. He's probably one of the most read bloggers. If you go over to, Technorati?
Technorati, right.
He's like in the top 50, or top 20, I think. He's like number 16. So lots and lots of people go to his blog, and he's found a whole new life there. And I think it's very interesting. Podcasting is being argued about now as to whether or not it will enjoy the same station in people's lives as blogging has acquired.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very interesting back and forth on that.
Let me talk with you briefly. I want to ask you quick about iTunes and podcasting. Do you think
sure.
that's had a major effect on who listens to podcasts?
Without a doubt, the release of iTunes 4.9 was the watershed event in the first year of podcasting's nascent rise. When that happened, people were caught with their pants down in terms of bandwidth, in terms of reaction speed to new listeners. Apple opened up the floodgates, not only to Mac users, because iTunes is available, as you know, for both Mac and Windows. A friend of mine has a radio show in San Francisco that is purely about Macintosh.
Mm-hmm.
And he started, because he was knew a lot of the Apple guys, he started on the front page and stayed there for the first 4 days, you know, was placed there out of the kindness of their hearts and stayed there because people just flocked to his podcast. He was getting 30 to 40,000 subscribers a day.
How did he handle the bandwidth on that?
Well, the cool thing is that when you end up on the front page of Apple's site, they contact you and they say, hey, can we help you out? They use a number of different content delivery networks. And I also turned him on to Coral. I don't know if you use Coral.
We're using Coral for our podcast,
right,
yeah.
So he never actually had to do that because, you know, Apple helped him out. But mm-hmm. But that's a couple of the options for people that listen to the show that are podcasters. If they don't know about Coral, they should go check it out, especially if they start to experience any sort of success with podcasting, however you define that. I have about 40 to 42,000 subscribers to the personal netcast, which goes along with the talk shows, and about 16,000 subscribers to the podcast that goes along with the Net Music Countdown. And, you know, without Coral, my ISP would be pretty thick.
Right.
Right. What is the URL to Coral Cache again?
CoralCDN.com.
Okay. All right. Let's go ahead and take some calls, shall we, David?
Sure. You bet.
Neil from Santa Cruz, what's your question? Welcome to Geek Speak.
Hey, it's me again. I called up the other week about router problems.
That's right.
And this week, I'm in front of my 23-inch cinema screen waiting for your advice. Last week, I was in my car, and I couldn't remember anything. So once a day, it seems like my router, I have a Netgear, and it's a firewall. I have eight, plugins.
Ports. Eight ports, yeah.
Thank you, ports. And I have an old, a Westfall modem. But, you know, when I asked Cruise IO to ping my modem, and they said my modem is fine. And everything works fine. It works great. I've got my...
What's the problem, then? Why are you calling?
The problem is that once a day, it stops. And I have to shut it off, not the computer, but shut the modem off and shut the router off and restart it. Not restart the computer, but restart both of those. And it's, you know, it's a pain.
You do, in fact, have to restart both. You haven't turned off one and then checked to see if it fixed it?
No, I haven't.
Okay, definitely do that, because that's going to answer the question of whether it's your DSL dropping out somehow or whether it's your router. Just basically, you have multiple computers or a printer that's connected to the router?
Yeah, I have a
Google
Pack.
Just see if you can still do that when you're when you don't have network.
Yes, and I can access the printer when I don't have network.
Right. So then in the router, there's probably a status page. And you want to take a look to see if you can access the gateway, for example, which would be on Cruise.io's side.
It should be on which?
On Cruise.io's side. So the router basically, I mean the modem, the DSL modem is going to act as a connection between your router and Cruise.io's routers, if you will,
mm-hmm.
or ISP's routers. And it depends on how you're connecting, but there's gateway information that's stored on your router that's being assigned basically from Cruise.io.
Well, can I see any of this in my Netgear settings?
You should be able to. There should be a status page. And
I'm looking at it now.
Okay. So, do you see a page that says gateway or IP address assigned or anything like that?
Well, my IP address I have, you know, get dynamically from ISP.
Sure, but does it tell you what it is?
That leads to an interesting question. Do you know where the setting is on the Visa expiration time? In other words, DSL can be set up to expire the connection, expire the DHCP IP address after a certain number, usually of minutes is what you set it at. And if you have a dynamic IP address and it, you know, it times out, then boom, you're off the web.
Oh, I have no idea if it times. Can I see that in my settings at all?
You should be able to. And referring to the manual, referring to the help screen on that, will show you exactly where that is. I set mine to a week so that if it happens that I expire, it expires in the middle of the night on Sunday night and then reestablishes itself immediately, but not when I'm in the middle of a session so that it doesn't knock me offline.
Now, David, are you talking about doing that on the router or the DSL modem?
Well, the router is where the...
It stores it.
Right, that's where you get the HTTP lease information.
The lease information. Not in the old days, it was called a Visa. Now it's called a lease because, of course, Visa came after the people that made that name up.
Trademark infringement.
Right.
So, Neil, that's what you're looking for is the DHCP lease storage information.
Okay, but is that on my router?
It should be on your router. That's right. It might be in an advanced area.
There are a number of different tabs that you'll see across there.
Yeah, I see
them. Explore those tabs, but don't change anything.
Oh, no, I haven't changed anything. You know, and when I called them, they said I had all my tabs right.
Yeah.
And when I called Cruise.io, they said I had everything right. And yet, usually once a day, I just get knocked off.
It sounds like that's the deal.
Well, definitely try this next time when it gets knocked off today. Try restarting your router only.
Just the router only?
And then at least we'll tell you whether, and if that doesn't do the trick, then you've got to get Cruise.io to help you out because they're responsible for your modem. Okay, good luck, Neil.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks for the call.
Bye.
We're going to go right over to Michael in Soquel. Welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm calling with a question pertaining to my computer and eBay and photos. Just in the last 2 days, I've encountered a really strange problem in my auctions. That the I use the eBay photo hosting option, and you know how you can there's a couple different packs that you can buy, you know, to show your photos, and so I use this thing called Picture Pack, and it allows you 6 or 7 pictures for $1, and you get a gallery picture,
and what's going on with it? What's the problem?
The big picture that when you open up your auction and you look at it, and then there's 6 little teeny pictures on the side, the big picture is never there. And this just started happening a couple of days ago on my auctions. And so I try to click on the little pictures. They won't show up in that. And so I'm wondering, like, what's going on? My computer works beautifully. It's a really reliable, good working computer.
It's not your computer,
clean.
Yeah, it's not your computer.
It's not your computer. Is this a third party that you purchased this from, like you purchased the counters and everything from? In other words, do you go to another site other than eBay to put the pictures up and then eBay sees the pictures?
No, I'm using eBay's hosting, photo hosting.
Okay, so a couple things, if I may.
Please.
Either the URLs that you know, have been leading you to your page. They were appearing fine at some point, correct?
Yeah, just a few days ago they were.
And
beautiful.
Nobody, you haven't changed the URL, the actual http://path to get to your pictures, correct?
I don't believe. No, I haven't. I don't even know what that means.
It's not you or your computer. It most likely is something within the infrastructure between eBay and their provider, because they're certainly not going to be, with the size of eBay, they're not going to have a few extra Windows machines hanging around just to put images on.
Yeah.
Usually they use something similar to Akamai, and it could be just a problem with the connection between them.
There's another possibility, Michael, I want to throw out there. Some browsers have the option to say, do not load images from other URLs than the page I'm visiting. And it basically combats some advertisement. It removes most advertisement, but it would also hurt your page because those images are probably located on a different server because eBay is probably hosting that server or asking for that service from somebody else.
Right.
Yeah.
What you want to do, go ahead and right-click on one of those images that's broken. And tell it to open that image in a new window.
Okay.
And then what you'll do is you'll get the full URL of the image. If it loads at that point, you probably got that problem with your browser. If it doesn't load at that point, you've got to contact these people, this service that you're spending money on, and complain.
I just wanted to say that I did the live help thing with eBay last night, and I spoke to a rep. And
real
they
person.
Said, we can open the thing, we can look at it, it's perfect, it's on you, you know, it's like your computer's not showing it. And so I was looking at it at a friend's house, and I can see it there at their house. The people at eBay can see the pictures fine.
So it's just you, huh?
Just
and I
me.
Think what Lyle said is absolutely correct. You may have that setting set on your browser.
I use Firefox.
Yeah, go into Firefox's preferences. I'm not sure where it is exactly.
Tools options.
Under tools options.
Okay.
And go in there and see about image loading and tell it to go ahead and load images all the time. Except for, in Firefox, that's fine. All right, I'm going to go to a different call. Thank you very much for calling.
Thank you.
All right. Wow, that was a loud line. It's hard to stay with it for so long, but I'm glad we helped out, Michael. I hope we did. We're going to go right to Ellen in Scotts Valley. Ellen, welcome to Geek Speak.
Thanks for taking my call.
Our pleasure. What's your question?
Yeah, I have a very non-technical question. I have a 10-year-old son who is just itching to spend his life savings, and this is like many years of, you know, any money given to him for birthdays or whatever, work he's done, chores. He's wanting to spend that life savings on a PSP.
Mm.
And we've been looking, his friend got one via the Craigslist, so I've been looking on Craigslist. And I'm just wondering, because I understand that they're not going to, they haven't sold the PSP as well as they thought, and they weren't going to make any more, and I have a lot of questions before he spends so much money. And also whether or not this price of the PSP, if you predict that might go down around Christmas time. And
okay, our geek Didi, who we had to say goodbye to when we started taking calls, responds with no. So I'm hopefully her response is relatively clear. But
I understand that that's a very religious response, though.
It does sound pretty religious.
Yeah.
Dave, what's your take on the PSP? This is a PlayStation
portable PlayStation.
PSP. First of all, understand that anybody who answers this question is going to answer it from the bias of what they use, if they use anything, for a little personal entertainment device. And so, you know, there are people who are no, because they see other things coming down the pike, or they prefer another device, or it's soon to be an orphan device. I mean, this is how quickly this cycle has occurred. The PSP has only been out for about a year. I mean, all told, from hey, let me show you this new thing that's coming out around the holidays, to now it's out and now it's showing its teeth.
Right. But it answers the question of, is the price going to go down onto it? Yes. In computers, everything goes down in price over time.
And if you make that the basis on which you buy things...
Well, will it become obsolete? Because I hear that they were expecting to
eventually
sell millions, and they've only sold maybe like 1 million, but they weren't going to make any more, and that kind of
thing. It's not so much as the hardware becoming obsolete, per se, with the PlayStation Portable. It's more to do with, if not enough people buy it, then game makers won't make new games for it.
So what's the point of having this device if there's nothing to, you know...
But this is Sony we're talking about. They're going to be having huge licensing deals with game manufacturers, so...
How much is it that he's getting it for? You know?
Well, we've looked on Craigslist, and I kind of feel like he shouldn't be put. He's, you know, like I said, this is his life savings, and he's got a couple hundred, and I feel like don't.
Well, understand, this would be an interesting life lesson for him as well if he spends his life savings on something and only gets a year or two out of it. Although, in the life of a child, a year or two is a millennia.
Exactly.
So, and believe me, the next bright, shiny bauble that comes along that does what the PSP does will capture his attention as well, no matter what he does, whether he buys this or not. I have a feeling that if he wants it because his friends have it and they can play together on things, you can buy movies for him on that. You know, they're coming out with versions of films for PSP. Mm-hmm. There's lots of reasons why he might want it. And then on the other hand, you want to take a look at the other things. It sounds like he wants to get it because his friends have it. Is that right?
Well, and because it's portable. And we're a non-TV family, so it's like, oh, I can watch DVDs on this little thing. And
Right.
Okay, Ellen, we're going to go ahead and go back to Didi in New York, who has a great response for you, I believe.
Okay.
So we'll say goodbye, but please do listen in.
Okay.
And I just want to welcome anybody else to call in at this point. The phone numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Okay, Didi, what is your take, what is your religious take, if you will, on the PSP?
Well, okay, my disclaimer is that David is right. I am kind of a Nintendo loyalist, but I do have a lot of friends who have bought or own PSPs. And their major complaint is that there aren't a whole lot of games at the moment. My friend Todd just bought one recently, and he gave me this disappointed look like, I bought a PSP, but I don't have any games. Because none of the games really appealed to him. So there's not a whole lot of titles out right now. And then you also have the fact that Sony is locking down content so hard on the PSP that any fun things that a geek might want to do versus, you know, a normal person... Are kind of
like a 10-year-old child.
Window.
Yeah, what about a 10-year-old child?
So, before going out and spending your life savings on one platform, you should definitely consider a wider range of gaming systems. Like, if you really wanted it to be a gaming system.
Right. Well, here's the take, though. And this is pretty clear, and I think David was touching on this. If his three, you know, closest friends have these things and they're using them all the time to play games together. That's the choice for him, and that makes sense. But a life savings decision, I don't know. I think the parents should come in here and pay for it. Wait a second. I'm
and,
a parent.
That's, and does Nintendo have a game station that's portable, like the PSP?
Pardon? Yeah, they have the DS.
The DS,
oh,
right.
It does, okay.
Well, how was the DS compared to the PSP?
Oh, the DS has a lot more games at the moment, and it can also do DS to DS wireless Wi-Fi gaming. You can do even DS to internet Wi-Fi gaming.
But not with PSP.
And is it more expensive?
It's actually less expensive.
Well, there's an option.
I would submit that this is a microcosm of what people hear every day from people like us who are technologically savvy. One of the reasons that you gave for him not to get it or at least consider other platforms is that you can't hack it. And I think that...
It's not just that you can't hack it. It's also he wants to watch movies on it. You have to purchase, or get the movies onto these really proprietary UMD.
But can he get movies and watch them?
And technically, you can't put Linux on a PSP. It has been done before.
Right. Well, we're talking about a 10-year-old kid here whose friends right. also have a PSP.
Yeah.
And that's the end of it, right?
That's it.
Plus,
that's
he wants it. He wants to spend his money. This is. Remember when you were 10 years old, and you really wanted that thing that your parents were like, but there's another one coming down the block 5 seconds from now. I know it.
But you see, Star Wars figures last forever.
There you go.
Actually, that didn't happen to me when I was 10.
That's because you're a geek and you made anything work. Dee, thank you. We're going to go on to other calls. Thanks, Dee, for calling us back and giving us your input.
No problem.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, from Big Sur, Jim, welcome to Geek Speak. What's your question?
Good morning. I have my main house with my regular computer, and then there's another place I stay with a secondary computer. And sometimes I access my email from that secondary place and computer. And one day, a pop-up asked me if I wanted to accept the cookie. And I said no, as I was accessing my email through my internet service provider.
Okay.
Through a browser or through
I said
email?
No by mistake.
Through a web browser?
It's Comcast as a service provider.
Right, but were you trying to get your email through a web interface or through something like Outlook Express?
No, through interface where I was calling up. I was going to my service provider site.
Right, okay. You were okay. Using a web browser. That's
okay.
Definitely
yeah,
important.
And so right at that point, it said, do you want to accept this cookie? And I instinctively said no. Ever since then, I have not been able to get to my email.
Okay.
That's pretty easy.
Yeah,
so how do I get to that thing I did and undo it?
Okay, Jim, hang on a second. David, you want to get this?
Sure. I think that people in general should stop thinking that cookies are going to kill you, because they're not. And in this case, the cookie was there so that it could keep track of you as someone who might be amongst many who use that particular computer and that browser
right.
to get your email.
Right.
So here's what you do. You just clear your cache and clear out your cookies, because now the cookie is set, or that particular site is set not to accept cookies. And if you don't accept cookies from that site, you can't use it. So
if I go to Internet Options and I clear out all those cookies, that will take away what I did.
It may, but more importantly, you might want to check the list of sites that you've said, no, I'm not going to accept cookies from.
Yeah, where do I find that?
It depends on your browser. But
it's probably under security is one of the options. David, what's another option?
Hold on. I'm looking here. Well, tools, Internet Options.
That's if he's using Firefox, Miles. He might not be.
Well, no, this is using Internet Explorer. He was talking about Internet Options, so I'm assuming he's using Internet Explorer.
Yeah.
Cool.
And let's see. Then you're going to click on Settings under Temporary Internet Files.
Right.
It's under Privacy.
Oh, man, this is just...
It's under Privacy, I believe.
It's a labyrinth maze here.
It is.
I'm trying to find it.
So start searching around. Look for a privacy setting. Look for stop receiving content or stop receiving cookies. You'll find it as you look through it. It's going to be in some verbiage that's close to that. It might be under an advanced tab. Probably under security or under privacy. That's my guess.
Another possibility is going to www.mozilla.org and downloading the Firefox web browser instead.
Well, good luck with that in Big Sur, Jim. You're welcome, of course, to contact us through email, and we will research a little bit more and answer your question more thoroughly.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
All right.
People have that reaction. They automatically say no to cookies. And I think that's a huge mistake. The press has done a terrific job of scaring people about cookies, and it's, you know.
It's unfounded. I mean, it's
well, with Internet Explorer, it had a lot of that cookie was either on or off. Didn't matter if the cookie's from a different site or whatever. Because that was, the issue was not cookies in and of itself, as David Lawrence was mentioning. It was more the cookie that comes from a third-party server. So if you're able to track to see which machine, like, because you'll have a series of sites that all use the same tracking service.
As an unabashed capitalist, I couldn't care less.
You're okay if they track you, huh?
Yeah. I mean, look, I love Barry Manilow, and I love Rob Zombie. Okay? Uh-huh. Go ahead. Mark it to me. I dare you.
All right, thank you. That's great. All right, we're going to go ahead and go to John in Santa Cruz. Welcome to GeekSpeak.
Oh, thank you for taking my call.
Certainly. What's your question?
I have a question problem. I imagine that's quite common. I've accumulated a lot of digital music now. I probably have 40 gigs of music, and I'm anxious to somehow tie that into my stereo in a way that's a little more practical than just the hardwire from my Dell music box.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering, the technologies along those lines are coming along pretty quickly now. I understand there are receivers that have UCB ports. I'm wondering what your advice is about the best way to possibly set it up as a network, or what might be the best way to make it so that I can listen to it through my stereo.
David, do you know of a good product that would...
You know, there are a ton of them. You know, you said you had a Sony?
No, I have a Dell music box as my little portable music box.
Oh, right,
box.
So your MP3 player.
Right.
You know, there are several products out on the market. I don't recommend any one over any of the others. They're usually sold at either higher-end audio stores or at places like Good Guys and Circuit City and so on. And basically, they create either a wireless or a wired central repository for your audio, your video. They're often tied into a TiVo or replay type of PVR. And it becomes the media center of your home. And I wish I could recommend a product over another, but it all depends on your setup. And you also might want to contact your local cable system, because they may have some advanced gear right now as well that you'll lease from them, but will do the same thing. There's a number of options in that space, and it's a growing space. I can recommend a podcast for you to listen to on this.
Yeah, that'd be great.
There's the HD TV podcast, and that's feeds.feedburner.com/HDTV podcast. Ara Derderian and his partner, Ara, actually created many of the Oscar award-winning Sony audio systems that are used in theaters. And he's really into home theater and integrating computers with your home theater experience, HDTV and more. And they just live for this sort of thing. So this is a perfect example of what a podcast can give you in terms of information. It's going to be a fun journey to look at all the different options.
It seems to me like in the next year or two, there's going to be a whole lot of this coming down the pike.
Right. So you might want to buy a PSP.
I think I'm beyond that.
All right, fine.
Thank you, John, for the call.
Thank you.
All right, we're not going to take any more calls today because we're closing up the show. So sorry, Paul, for that. But if you'd like to ask us questions, you're welcome to do so through geekspeak.org. Just click on Contact Us, and we'll do our best to answer that. We're going to be wrapping up the show pretty quick, but David, I just wanted to thank you very much for letting us keep our name GeekSpeak, and for being so great in that I can now not worry about someone telling me not to use it.
Yeah, there you go.
Which is nice.
I appreciate it.
Go ahead and promote your upcoming show tonight. What do you got tonight? What do you?
You know, we tend to sort of watch what goes on during the day and then sort of build the show as the day goes on. Since we do a daily show and it's based on current events, we build it as the day goes on.
Well, I recommend putting a whole segment on our show.
Wait, you're saying that like computers and technology is a fast-moving
area? Very much so. Very, very much so.
What are you talking about?
Yeah.
Glacial.
But I would like to have you, at least you, Lyle, on the show.
Oh, I see how it is.
No. And invite everybody, because, you know, we can get you all on the show. We'd love to have you all on the show. And if you're ever down in L.A., please come to the studio. So.
Thank you very much, David. This is David Lawrence, talk show host on multiple networks. David Lawrence owns the registered name GeekSpeak and has let us use it by permission. Thank you very much, David, for being on GeekSpeak.
Sure, my pleasure.
This program is supported by a grant from Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer and electronic parts as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 SoCal Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. The Geeks this morning were Dee Dee Hubbard and Miles Elam. Maggie Cleveland is off as well as Sean Cleveland because they just had a baby. You can learn more about that at river.cleveland.nu. Brand new baby for our producer and one of the Geeks. You're listening to Geek Speak. Thanks all for listening and calling in to making Geek Speak what it is. This program is supported by a Culture Council of Santa Cruz County. The Culture Council provides grants to support arts organizations and individuals. Next week, we'll be back. We don't have a show planned yet, but we'll be here, and we'll have something amazing. Coming up next is Open Road with Matt Pierce. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP Santa Cruz, KBDH San Ardo, or on the web at KUSP.org. For KUSP and Geek Speak, I'm Lyle Troxell. Stay tuned for Matt Pierce right after some NPR news. Thanks for listening.